Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell. Today, I am talking with Lindsey Jones of The Athletic, previewing the four divisional round games. But first, I want to tell you guys about another podcast that gets into stuff. And that is The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Yes, the podcast hosted by ESPN's Mina Kimes that brings you the latest news and trends in and around the NFL. Join Mina and her guests, including NFL analyst Dominique Foxworth, insider and fantasy football host Field Yates, ESPN Radio's Mike Golic Jr., and yes, even sometimes your friend Bill Barnwell. So if you like X's and O's, analytics, and probably too much dog talk, yes, of course, Lenny is a dog, but give the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny a listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here's Lindsey Jones previewing the four divisional round games.
All right, joining me now here, as promised on the Bill Barnwell Show, to preview the divisional round, not just a frequent contributor to this show, not just an excellent writer and podcaster for The Athletic, not just the mother of Twitter pick sensation, Lena Jones, but a Hall of Fame voter, I believe for the first time this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was the first time this year. So it was a big week. We voted. The meeting was 7.5 hours long on Zoom on Monday. And everybody will get to find out in a couple weeks. Like, we don't know the answers. We, you know, had a lot of debating and a lot of voting, and we'll all learn who the official class is on February 10th, along with everybody else.
A person who survived a 7.5 hour Zoom call.
And that was short. I was preparing that it was going to be 9 hours, maybe longer. Like, I had childcare arrangements made in case the meeting wasn't over in time for me to get to daycare to pick up my child at the end of the day. But yeah, we made it. It was really interesting. It was an honor to be part of it. And I learned a lot. And it was really great to be part of, and I can't wait to see who the official class is in a couple of weeks.
Be very diplomatic. Lindsey Jones of The Athletic is joining us. Lindsey, what's up?
Oh, I'm good. Yeah, I'm excited. This is my favorite week of the year.
Really?
Of the entire NFL calendar, yes. This is it.
More so than Wild Card Weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Wild Card, there's more games, but there's something really nice about two games each day. On Saturday and Sunday, you can kind of have your morning. But all of the games are usually really good this round. You know, we don't have any of the seven seeds, the teams that shouldn't have been in the playoffs. None of those guys are hanging out there anymore. And this year, especially, I mean, I think at least a couple of these games are, I mean, really like blockbuster type games. Rams, yeah. Bucks. I mean, that absolutely could have been the NFC Championship game. And Bills, Chiefs, I think most of us probably assumed for a lot of the year that Bills, Chiefs was going to be the AFC Championship game. And we're getting that here on divisional round weekend. So it's my favorite weekend. You can really focus on four games. The four games should be really good. And I'm excited. Let's go.
Yeah, me too. Let's start with Bills, Chiefs, actually, because I feel like that's the, you know, that has the possibility, at least in my head, to be the most dramatic, like, you know, classic shootout 41-38 kind of game. And yet we saw these two teams play earlier this season, and it was not pretty. I mean, the final score was 38-20. It felt like it was 75-0. Like, the Bills were just annihilating the Chiefs. The Chiefs couldn't get out of their own way. The Bills were moving the ball all over the place. Josh Allen was averaging like 12 yards per attempt. It was crazy. Now, one game does not prove that the sequel is going to be exactly the same way. And we have seen the Chiefs beat the Bills as recently as last year's AFC Championship game. But Lindsey, if you start with this game here, I mean, do you think that the rematch here is likely to be significantly different from the first time these two teams played?
Yeah, I think so. And look, I hope so. I hope it's a more competitive game. But I think the Chiefs especially are a far different team now than they were back in week five. And if we go back to early October, I mean, we were all worried that the Chiefs were, I mean, I don't know if I ever thought that they wouldn't make the playoffs. I kind of always thought they would be in that playoff mix, but I had really, really significant concerns about their ability to make another run to the Super Bowl, that they definitely weren't playing like the best team in the AFC. And that was when we all had those concerns about, oh, the offense is broken. Has everybody figured out Patrick Mahomes? Is the defense going to be this team's fatal flaw? And look, their defense was terrible. I mean, at that point of the year, back at week five, they were on like a historically bad pace. I mean, it was embarrassing. They also didn't have a lot of guys that are going to be really important parts of Sunday's game. A lot of those guys weren't playing in that game. Chris Jones, notably. Daniel Sorensen was playing a lot in that game. I mean, there were just a lot of defensive changes that have happened in the time since. So I think this game will be significantly more competitive. But I will say the Bills, I think, are also playing better at this point in the season than they were back in week five.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, we're going to talk about the Chiefs and how much you think about how they played last week and what that means for them moving forward. But I mean, the Bills, geez Louise, like, people were coming into that game like last week saying, oh, it's going to be cold. They're going to have to be conservative. Josh Allen is the same when it's really cold out. And I mean, Josh Allen was like it felt like he had channeled the spirit of Buffalo that had spent 20 years wanting to stick it to Bill Belichick and the Patriots in a playoff game. And they finally got to do it here. It was like so like just overwhelming how dominant the Bills were early in that football game. And we saw the Bills, I mean, change a little bit. We saw them run the ball more frequently than maybe they had in weeks past. We saw Josh Allen be a more focal point of the running game. Which makes sense. I mean, in the playoffs, you figure, okay, let's take the shackles off. Well, you know, let's not leave anything on the table. If Josh Allen's going to run the ball six times, let's have him run the ball six times and he ran for 66 yards in that game. I mean, did you feel like we saw a different Bills team and a different sort of ceiling for the Bills team than you've seen for them maybe over the second half of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it just seemed like that was their, you know, everything was going right when your running game is working, your passing game is working, your quarterback has ascended to a different plane where he just like, it was, I mean, it was unreal. And it might be unfair to expect that we'll see that sort of performance out of Josh Allen again, but I think we're seeing him take over games on a routine basis. And it's not just against the Patriots, although he did it twice against the Patriots over the last few weeks, including that game last week, where you just realize like, oh man, this dude is ready to kind of get into that elite quarterback. I mean, I think he was already there. I mean, he got MVP votes last year, but to really kind of solidify yourself in that tier, you need to win on the biggest stage. You have to carry your team to playoff victories. And obviously he did that last week against a Patriots team that seemed to be a little bit overmatched. I mean, Mac Jones was not equipped to get into a type of game where he had to score touchdowns in seven straight possessions.
No.
And there's not a lot of teams that are ready to do or are able to do that. The Chiefs might be. They weren't in October, but they might be now. I mean, we're seeing them where they still will have these stalls. Will, you know, when they turn the ball over, that, you know, that can be frustrating. That was one of the biggest problems that they had early on in the season, but they can still score really, really quickly. They're still really creative. You know, it's still nearly impossible to cover both Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. So I don't think we've seen the best offensive game out of the Chiefs yet. We've seen it out of the Bills. Now we just need to see if the Bills can do it again. And now we need to see if the Chiefs can kind of get to that level that they were at over, you know, in 2019 and through a lot of 2020. Now against a Bills team the Bills defense has been playing really, really well. I mean, obviously we want to talk so much about Josh Allen, but the other part of the way that the Bills just were that buzzsaw going through New England last week was everything that they did on defense to make it impossible for Mac Jones and company to really get anything going.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like Mac Jones had to make spectacular plays, which he made a couple of in that game. He was better than I thought he was going to be. But just that, like, you know, he'd make a couple great plays, and then he'd have that incredible Micah Hyde interception, you know, where it'd just be like just a spirit breaker, you know, for the Patriots offense. Like, they do one good thing, and then it would immediately break down afterwards. What I will say, though, and I find really fascinating about the Chiefs side of things on offense here, is that we kind of saw both versions of the Chiefs against the Steelers last week. The first five possessions of that game, three punts, an interception, and a fumble. I mean, the fumble on the Wildcat play where Darrell Williams came in, fumbled. I think T.J. Watt returned it for a touchdown. And I was like, okay, these are the same Chiefs we saw early in 2021 where they're sloppy, they make bad mistakes, they're not protecting the football, and they're not hitting big plays. Well, funny I should say that, because the next six drives turned into touchdowns for the Chiefs. 76 yards, 74 yards, 80 yards, 68 yards, 29 yards, 75 yards, all touchdown drives for the Chiefs. And that felt to me a lot like the Chiefs we saw in 2019 in the postseason, where it felt like they weren't alive until they got down 10-0 or 14-0. And then suddenly it was, whoop, we are moving forward. We are scoring touchdown after touchdown. So, I mean, Lindsay, do you feel like the way the Chiefs played after that slow start last week is sustainable and something they can do against the Bills here?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've seen stretches. You know, we do have a large body of work, yeah, which to judge the Chiefs over the course of not just season, but, you know, certainly year after year. And they are able to flip that switch and flip it really quickly. The problem potentially against the Bills is that if they get off to another slow start, if there is an interception early, if they do lose a fumble early, mm-hmm, what sort of hole can they dig themselves out of? I mean, this, yeah, doesn't necessarily feel like the type of matchup where, you know, you can go down 24-0 like they did a couple of years ago against, mm-hmm, the Texans, or even when they fell behind by a couple scores to the Titans a couple of years ago. The Bills just seem ready to score at will. And, you know, I think the Chiefs defense has been playing a lot better, and they're going to need to play better early to give Mahomes and company, you know, some breathing room in case it does take them. I think they're generally really good on their first drive. Mm-hmm. So I want to, you know, give Andy Reid a lot of credit here and assume that they'll be able to put together a really good first 15, that there's not going to be this kind of slow start. I mean, everybody seems to be pretty healthy now on the Chiefs offense. You know, mm-hmm, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been practicing fully. Daryl Williams has not been, but he's a little bit secondary to what they do, but, you know, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and their whole offensive line, and, you know, they're getting more contributions out of their third and fourth receivers than they had been earlier in the year. So, you know, this is really the time that the Chiefs need to put together that perfect offensive performance, and they can't afford to have that sort of early game dip that they had too often this season.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to say that, you know, the Bills could take an early lead in that game. Wouldn't be out of the question. But I think the difference between the Bills and maybe that Texans team a couple of years ago is that the Texans weren't able to sustain what they were doing in offense. They had the fake punt, they slowed down, they made mistakes. The Bills, I mean, they can get going early and then just keep going. It's not like they're going to suddenly stop because they had a couple hot drives to start the game. So I think this is going to be a really tough matchup for the Chiefs offense. The one thing I would say is that I believe the numbers bear this out, and I could be wrong. I feel like the Chiefs are much better on defense at home than they are on the road. And even though the Bills did beat the Chiefs this year, the Bills slumped a little bit. They lost to the Jags. I mean, they ended up ended up with a lower seed. So they're going to be playing in Kansas City here. And I feel like that's the reason I lean ever so slightly towards the Chiefs here.
Yeah, and I absolutely think that's fair. You know, I think we've seen both of these teams like lay eggs this season.
Yes, for sure.
That Bills-Jags game is going to, you know, when we look back, when this season is all over, when we look back at 2021, it's going to be this like glaring what the heck happened on that day type, mm-hmm, of moment. But it was kind of a reminder that just like any quarterback or just like any team, really, if a pass rush is feeling it and the pass rush is hitting over and over and over, Josh Allen can get flustered and, mm-hmm, he can have a really bad day. So is this the type of, is Chris Jones and Frank Clark and Melvin Ingram, are they ready to have that type of game? Can they consistently get, you know, that sort of pressure and fluster Josh Allen while there's, you know, good coverage on the back end? I don't know. It's crazy to think, like, can the Chiefs replicate what the Bills or what the Jags did? I mean, nobody wants to replicate anything that the Jags did this year, but, I don't think there's some giant secret out there of like what you need to do, mm-hmm, to beat Josh Allen. He just right now feels like he's playing on this different level and ready to just run dudes over and throw deep bombs. And it just feels like he's on this kind of path where he's ready to he's ready to get to a Super Bowl. And I do feel like there were a lot of moments last season, mm-hmm, you know, even heading into the AFC Championship game where that Bills team felt like they were maybe kind of still a year away. They were kind of like the Chiefs were during Patrick Mahomes' breakout season when they ended up losing to the Patriots, where, you know, you saw this quarterback who was, you know, coming into his own game after game after game and ready to take games over. But like, just as a team, they weren't quite all the way there. And, you know, the Bills had their dips this year, but they feel to me like they're that team that's ready to make a jump.
So you're picking the Bills here.
I think so. Spoiler alert, my child, who is way better at picking games than I am, is picking the Chiefs. So I'll take that for what it's worth.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right. So, I mean, I don't want to spoil Lena's picks, but I think the Bills are a totally viable pick here. I would not be shocked in the slightest if the Bills won. I'm going to side with your very wise daughter.
That's probably smart. It's a really dumb thing to bet against Patrick Mahomes.
But it's also kind of dumb to bet against Josh Allen. Like this is going to be, I think, a really fun game. I think we're going to get maybe a classic here, and I think that'd be really cool.
God, I hope so.
On the other side of the weekend. AFC. Yes, exactly. Like, it's not going to be like this week where it was like the last game of the weekend was done by halftime. We're all like, okay, can we go to sleep early here? Like, do we have to keep watching this game? The first game of the weekend, though, is Bengals and Titans, a team that a matchup I don't think people were expecting before the year. The Bengals, the winners of the AFC North, Tennessee, the top seed in the AFC South. And of course, I think there's a lot of skeptics of Tennessee. I know we've seen them put up some stinkers. They also lost to the Jaguars. A weird feat for the two of the four division winners here in the AFC. But Tennessee, of course, it looks like they're getting back Derrick Henry. Looks like they're going to have the full complement of their big three with Julio Jones, AJ Brown, and Derrick Henry returning from his foot injury. If we're assuming Henry is back, which as we record this, I think it is still up in the air. I mean, Lindsay, do you think this is a drastically different Tennessee team from the team we've seen over the second half of the year without Henry?
Well, I mean, he just makes everything that they do better. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think they've still wanted to run the ball. I think they've still wanted to, you know, use some play action because that's really what Ryan Tannehill does best. When you have Derrick Henry, who's one of the, you know, the very elite running backs in this league. And it's just wild to look at like the 2021 rushing stats and see that Derrick Henry is still right near the top. You know, he's like in the top five, I think. And he missed all of those games. It's just, you know, he just makes everything that they do a lot easier, and it completely changes what the Bengals are going to have to do defensively when you know that you have to count for Derrick Henry on every play. And he hasn't officially been activated yet, but he has practiced. It's certainly trending that way. It's, you know, it's just kind of a procedural move, I think, but you know, he's practiced in full and those sorts of things. So I believe the deadline is 24 hours. So it should be like Friday afternoon, I think, is when they have to officially activate him off of injured reserve, but it's certainly trending that way. I know the Bengals are preparing as if they're going to have to face him. But I don't think it's just that the Titans are going to have Derrick Henry back, or assuming they're going to have Derrick Henry back. It's what you mentioned, that they also are going to have, you know, Julio Jones and AJ Brown. And I would need to pull up the exact number of snap counts here, but you know, I don't think those three guys had that much time on the field together this year.
I had it in my column somewhere. I think it was like 150-ish.
That's not a lot. That's what,
About 15%?
Full games worth or so. I mean, that's not, that's really not a lot. So, you know, we're finally now here in mid-January going to see the Titans offense that the Titans wish they would have had all year, that when they made that trade for Julio Jones last offseason. This is kind of what the best version of the Titans is going to be. And, you know, that's good, because there were times this year where they weren't great. And, you know, you said skeptics of the Titans. I certainly have been one of them on the Athletic Football Show. I apologized. We went back over some of our bad takes, and I apologized for writing the Titans off over and over and over. But here they are. I mean, I think they just deserve a ton of credit for the resilience that they've shown this year, and, you know, winning the games that they had to win when it counted. And yes, they lost to the Jags, and they lost to the Jets.
Did they lose to the Jags? No, they beat.
They
the
lost
Jags.
To the I Texans. Thought. Excuse me, they lost to the Texans, to the Jets.
They lost to the Jets and the Texans. They beat the Jaguars twice. So yeah, I mean, basically, there's three like embarrassing teams to lose to, and Tennessee beat one of them twice and lost to the other two. It's like they're such a weird team to figure out. Right, because like the first half of their season, they have Henry. They didn't have Julio for much of that. I think AJ Brown was hurt for a little bit of his as well. Like Taylor Lewan, I think, was missing for a time, but Dupree was hurt. And yet, like, yes, they did lose to the Jets. They lost to the Cardinals, but they beat the Colts. They beat the Bills. They beat the Chiefs. They beat the Colts again. They beat the Rams. They beat the Saints. Like, they're beating these legit teams in impressive fashion. And yes, the Bills game came down to a fourth down stuff. Like, but like they blew out the Chiefs.
They beat the hell out of the Chiefs. I mean, that was the rock bottom moment for the Chiefs this year.
Yes, 100%. And like, we know what their ceiling is. Like, their ceiling is not just competing with the best teams in football. It is manhandling the best teams in football. And so I guess I wonder, like, do you think this is just a thing where in the second half they were banged up? They knew they were ahead of things, knew the division was basically locked up, and so they maybe coasted a bit, and maybe had some games where they struggled. Or do you think this is a thing where they sort of play up to their competition, and when they know, hey, the spotlight's on us, we know we have a big game, we know we have tough competition, we know that people kind of maybe don't believe in us the same way they believe in another team. Like, do you think that plays up for them? Like what do you think is the sort of underlying logic behind how this team has performed over the course of the 2020 season?
I mean, I think the injury stuff is real, and the lineup changes that they've had to go through. I mean, they had to play more players, you know, on their roster this year because of injuries. I mean, they had injuries. It wasn't just those big three offensive guys that dealt with injuries. It was up and down their offensive line. It was across most of their defensive lineup as well, that they were dealing with a lot of injuries, and they still are, you know, having some of that. I mean, I think they've gotten healthy on defense right now too. It looks like Jackrabbit Jenkins is going to play. He had been kind of the guy you were watching. They did lose a couple guys, you know, Caleb Farley tore his ACL, you know, he was really coming on. He was having a really nice, kind of a nice find there, but it was up and down the roster. So I think that was a big part of it, that they just had so much change throughout the course of the year. I don't know. I'm sure they're playing with that giant chip. I mean, has there been, when was the last time there was a number one seed that, you know, probably so roundly were criticized for being the number one seed? I mean, I think just the way that we've already talked about this, the games on this podcast, I think we would all, you know, every single power rankings that's out there has the Chiefs and the Bills as the top two teams in the AFC. You know, I don't think the Titans were ever, you know, in our athletic power rankings, I don't think the Titans were ever above, I mean, maybe they got to number three, but I don't think they ever got that high. I don't think they were ever above both of those other two teams in the conference. So, you know, but I just think that they've been able to get here because they're so well coached. Mike Vrabel just has such a good handle on who his team is, what they need. He's maybe the best like in-game coach right now in terms of like situational football and being able to manipulate the clock and just knowing exactly, you know, the right buttons to push at the right time. And they've just, I think his team has really, really responded to that. And, we'll see what that means on Sunday, because they're now playing a Bengals team that kind of just has one of those little, like, there's just something special about the Bengals right now. And I think Zach Taylor has a really good pulse for what Joe Burrow can do and needs to do. I think he's really empowered Joe Burrow to be aggressive. And God, there's just something, he has it, right? I mean, he just has that thing where it's not unlike the Josh Allen taking over games level right now, because Josh Allen is doing so much of it with his legs, but Joe Burrow just has that like big game thing.
It feels that way, right?
Yeah.
Like you feel really confident that Joe Burrow is going to come through in a way that maybe you don't feel about most guys in their really first full season as a pro starter. I mean, Joe Burrow, of course, last year tore his ACL halfway through the year. I think week 10 suffered, you know, that catastrophic knee injury, missed the rest of the season. I mean, it sort of felt like they've taken, I know that the shackles is the wrong word, but like the train, not the training wheels either, but they're throwing the ball a lot more over these past 2 weeks. And you kind of figured, okay, when they played the Ravens, well, like the Ravens were starting a bunch of JV people in their secondary. So yeah, throw the ball a lot. That worked out well for them. Joe Burrow had like 500 yards or something crazy in that game. But then the Chiefs game next week, it's a shootout. They have Joe Burrow throw the ball a ton. They beat the Chiefs that game. They get super aggressive, maybe too aggressive, even by my standards, on fourth down late in that game, but it works out. They win the game. Browns game, everyone takes off. But then last week, we saw them early on throw the ball a bunch against the Raiders, get a lead, and then hold on to that lead as the game went on. So it feels like they're relying more on Burrow. Like they're not as much of a balanced team, and it's to the benefit of that team because I think the strength of that team is their passing attack. I guess the one thing that comes to mind for me, Lindsay, and I don't know if you agree with this, do you feel like from the Bengals' perspective, they're playing with house money? Like, I think I wrote about this in my column, I think today, if you told a Bengals fan before the year or a Bengals player before the year, hey, you're going to win the AFC North, you're going to win a playoff game, every single person would have signed up for that. And yet they're one win away from the AFC championship game. Like I sort of wonder if, you know, for Tennessee, like they have to win. Like, this is their chance as the one seed. For the Bengals, it kind of feels like if they don't win, well, it's still fine because they had a great season.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something maybe freeing about that if you're the Bengals. I don't think there's any bit of the Bengals that are like, we're just happy to be here. And because I think they believe that they deserve to be here and they've been playing well enough to have earned that. I could get that if, you know, maybe that Bengals fans would kind of feel that way, because it does feel like they maybe are a year ahead of schedule, that this kind of development process for Burrow, especially given the injury that he had as a rookie and the uncertainties that we all had about him early, that, you know, coming into the season, just given, you know, it's really hard to come back off of an ACL and miss that really critical offseason time between your first and second season. It does feel like they're ahead of schedule, but it probably is freeing to know that, okay, there's not a ton of pressure on them in this, in this situation. But I don't think they're just like, yeah, who cares what happens? We're just happy to be here. I mean, I think they feel like that this is a really special group, that they've tapped into a really good formula. But like you said, with that passing game, I mean, they've been ridiculous. I mean, I think what Burrow's averaging, like 9.8 yards per attempt and 75%, you know, completing 75% of his passes over these last 5 weeks. I don't think he's even had a pick in those last five games as well. But they have shown that they can run the ball.
Yes.
If they need to, they can win different ways. You know, I hope that this is a close game. I mean, like I said, this is my favorite weekend of the year. All of the games usually in this round are pretty competitive. If it gets into a, you know, we need one game winning drive and it's Joe Burrow versus Ryan Tannehill, that's going to be really fun. I mean, because Burrow has that clutch thing about him, but Derrick Henry is a hell of a closer as well. Yeah. I mean, how many times have we seen him kind of like win them an overtime game? Cause he just rips off a 60-yard run you know, when he needs to. So I'm excited. I mean, I think if you would have told me, you know, in October, you know, one of the playoff games is going to be Titans Bengals, I would have probably asked you for like a shot of whatever you were drinking, but then I probably have been like, yeah, I don't know. I'm not that excited about it, but yes, it's the first game of the weekend. It's kind of has the worst of the broadcast slots, but I think it should be a nice way to kind of kick off the weekend.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I feel like it's like, we know so much about these teams. Like we've seen Niners Packers before. We've seen Bills Chiefs before. Bengals Titans feels like it's like kind of like a new matchup. Like we're sort of figuring out, okay, what is Joe Burrow's reputation going to be? Like how much can we trust Tennessee, even if they win? Like even if Tennessee wins, like, well, how do they win? Do we have more faith in them heading into this possible, you know, AFC championship game against the Bills and the Chiefs? It feels like there is a unknown quantity to it that I feel like is interesting in a way that maybe there isn't for some of these other games. But who do you think actually pulls this one out?
Yeah. I've gone back and forth on this one a lot. I've been so skeptical of the Titans, mm-hmm. like all year long. And the Bengals just do have that like little special something about them right now. So I think I'm going to lean towards the Bengals, which means nice. I'm picking two road teams mm-hmm. in the playoffs, which seems really dumb of me.
I don't think it's dumb. It's not like like they're like crazy underdogs. Like, what are they? Are they 6.5? No, they're 3.5. They're like, that's not crazy in the slightest. The Bills are 1.5-point underdogs. The Bengals are 3.5-point underdogs. I mean, it's certainly, you know, I feel like a lot of people feel this way about Tennessee. And I think for them, this is a game where they have to prove it. You know, not only win, I think, but win comfortably. Prove, hey, we belong on a level with the Bills and the Chiefs. So I think to me, I think the emotional burst, I guess, of getting Derrick Henry back. Yeah. I think having that week off helps. I think the Bengals are going to, you know, they're going to compete. They're going to show and impress, and they're going to give a good accounting of themselves. But I think Tennessee just, this is like too important of a game for them. I think they pull this one out.
It's one of those things where if you're picking like, okay, well, which coach do you trust more? I trust Mike Vrabel more. Which quarterback do you trust more? Well, Ryan Tannehill has more playoff experience, but Joe Burrow has that I'm going to destroy you in the fourth quarter of a game type of thing. So it's really, I think this is a really, really tough game to pick. So we'll be on opposite sides of both of these games, the AFC games, and we'll reconvene Sunday night to see how it's all gone. And we'll compare our records too.
You can shame me on the next episode of the Lena Pick Show. But we have to talk about the NFC as well. And I mean, two great games, Niners, Packers, Rams, Buccaneers. Let's start with the Saturday game. Niners, Packers. Of course, a couple of years ago, the Niners just seemed to have the Packers number. The pass rush blew up Aaron Rodgers in the regular season and in the playoff game. I would say, really honestly, the Niners have had two of the most impressive running game performances in the playoffs over the last 12 years or so. And it's both been against the Packers. One was the Colin Kaepernick. I think he ran for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns, maybe. So he had some kind of crazy numbers in that game. But the Colin Kaepernick game. And then, of course, a couple of years ago, the Raheem Mostert 4-touchdown game, 37-20 blowout victory for the Niners. Now, that was in not Candlestick, AT&T Park. Is that what it's still called? Levi's Stadium. Levi Stadium, yes. 2 years ago.
Yeah. And I was like, where the Giants play? yes. I was trying to think, I was like, did I misremember something? Yes, that game was in San Francisco.
Yes, and this one is in Green Bay at Lambeau. The Packers were the one seed. I mean, they've been so impressive this year. Really only one loss with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Two with Aaron Rodgers, the Vikings game as well. Vikings and the Saints, two losses with Jordan Love at quarterback, but just such a great team and getting so many pieces back. I mean, David Bakhtiari injured, but expected to play after playing at the end of the season. Jair Alexander possibly coming back. Za'Darius Smith possibly coming back. Whitney Mercilus possibly coming back. I mean, it is wild to see the Packers, number one, play so well, missing so many key players, and number two, getting so many pieces back after the bye. But Lindsay, earlier this year, the Niners almost beat the Packers. They were up 28-27 with 37 seconds to go, only to get Aaron Rodgers on a last-second drive. We know how good the Packers are, but do you think the Niners have the Packers' number?
I think there's a little bit, and the underlying storyline here is always the Kyle Shanahan versus Matt LaFleur, which has taken a lot of twists and turns over the last couple of years, from, you know, the best friends who are facing each other, who know each other so well, to, you know, now it certainly seems like this is much more like a rivalry type situation, mm-hmm. maybe not nearly as friendly, maybe not friendly at all, depending on how deep into the NFL gossip mill you want to get in there, but, you know, seems real frosty compared to how it used to be. I think the Niners certainly had the upper hand in this. I mean, those, you know, the first two games and what they've split, they played four times recently. Niners have won two. The Packers have won two. The Niners won the first two back in 2019, including that NFC Championship game that you mentioned. You know, but the Packers have kind of had that edge since. But, you know, the thing, as you mentioned, the kryptonite for the Packers there had been their run defense. And that is really what makes the Niners go. And are they going to be any better? Is the, you know, are the changes that they've made to their defense since those games, different defensive coordinator, Joe Barry is the guy there now. Devondre Campbell has been, you know, arguably like the best free agent addition anywhere in the league this year. I mean, given the value that they got him and the way that he's played, the difference that he's kind of made in the center of their defense, you know, are they better equipped? You know, but I, the Niners know who they are, right? I mean, we know what they want to do. They're going to just mash the hell out of people blocking wise. I mean, Trent Williams and George Kittle, and then they're going to put Deebo Samuel all over the place. He's probably going to have what, 5, 6, 7 carries out of the backfield. I mean, they're just going to do a lot of really interesting, creative stuff and just try to beat the Packers down like they've done before, you'd think.
Yeah. I mean, certainly it feels like that's the formula. And given Jimmy Garoppolo's injuries, it feels like that's the only way they can win. You know, like there's other matchups this weekend where it feels like, okay, you know, the Bills can win a close game with their defense. They can also win a shootout. That is not out of the question. The Niners, it feels like they can't win a game where they need Jimmy Garoppolo to throw the ball 40 times. It just feels like Jimmy Garoppolo is going to make too many mistakes. Packers too good at forcing takeaways. And the Niners just too inconsistent throwing the football with a admittedly injured Jimmy Garoppolo to make that work. Do you, this is sort of a tough question because it kind of hits on a couple different games here. Maybe I'm a little biased or taking some anecdotal evidence and trying to make it something more than it actually is. But I think about the Niners in the 2019 Super Bowl, where Kyle Shanahan was conservative early in that game and it cost them later on. I think about the game here in 2021, where they were up, they scored a touchdown with 37 seconds left. I think it was a Kyle Juszczyk touchdown against the Packers, but they mismanaged the clock late in that game. They did not run clock, didn't use their timeouts effectively, and left Aaron Rodgers just enough time to lead a game-winning drive for a field goal. We saw Kyle Shanahan make some questionable fourth down decisions against the Cowboys last week, but the Cowboys did what the Cowboys did. And so it was a, not exactly the sternest stuff and did not matter, but it, I guess I wonder, you know, are you concerned that Kyle Shanahan in terms of his game management is a problem for these 49ers?
There's a lot of evidence there. I mean, I don't think this is something that you're just making up. I think we even, you know, we have a, we all like to analyze sideline body language and facial expressions. And there's, we've had a lot of sideline camera shots on Kyle Shanahan. A part of that is, I think, might be not fully trusting his quarterback in those, in those type of moments. And Jimmy Garoppolo has routinely reinforced why we shouldn't trust him in those situations. Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know, you know, I would love to get Kyle Shanahan to truly, you know, give him some truth serum or, you know, 18 beers at the combine or whatever it is to like truly hear, you know, how he feels, you know, what he truly feels, because I don't, you know, I don't know if he's ever truly gotten over the end of the Super Bowl. When he was both of them. Well, starting with it when he was the coordinator for the Falcons, the way that game happened. And then certainly the end of the Super Bowl against the Chiefs. And I don't know if there's, you know, you never want to coach scared. And I don't think he necessarily is coaching scared, but I do think there's that thing that's probably always in the back of his mind, and you get tight and it changes your decision-making process. And if you, it's the opposite of some of these other guys that we've already talked about, where if you're Zach Taylor, you can be free at the end of the game in your play calling right now, because you're just going to let Joe Burrow go rip. You know, Andy Reid went from being the butt of every single game management joke forever for the entirety of his career. And then he got Patrick Mahomes and he became, you know, the best late game coach because they were aggressive and he wasn't scared to call anything. And every single play in his playbook was available to him because Patrick Mahomes made that possible. Kyle Shanahan doesn't have that with Garoppolo. He doesn't have that full trust that you can do anything you need with your quarterback is going to make the big throws in the key situations, and that, you know, changes your late game play calling. And so in this situation, when we're talking coaching matchups or whatever, you know, Matt, I'd give Matt LaFleur the edge here, in large part because of what Aaron Rodgers gives him, you know, just like the last time these two teams played, and Rodgers needed, what, 37 seconds to drive him in field goal range. And that's all he needed, 37 seconds. Jimmy Garoppolo is not giving you a game-winning drive probably in 37 seconds.
No, absolutely not. And it just feels like I want to pick the 49ers here, but I just think it's too many pieces coming back. It's too significant of a quarterback difference, especially with Garoppolo injured. You know, if Garoppolo is healthy, not that he is a great quarterback when he's healthy, but at least we know, hey, if the team is running the ball effectively, he can hit some shots off play action. I feel like the Packers are just too deep of a team on both sides of the ball. They have too many pieces to contend with. The Niners have, I mean, you know, there is a scenario where Debo and George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk are just so good that they're irresistible and they overcome things and win this game. But I just think the Packers have so many advantages across the board here that I just can't imagine those stars playing so well throughout the entire game to make up for the weaknesses on this Niners roster.
Yeah. I mean, I think Debo Samuel is probably my like singular favorite player in this game. You know, I just, because he's just so fun to watch and can do so many different things, but the Packers have some pretty good offensive players too, you know, with the Rodgers, Davante Adams. I mean, I don't know, probably at least three times a game, every time the Packers play, they connect for one of those, or, you know, three times, they keep connecting for those, like, oh my God, I can't believe that throw, that catch. Mm-hmm. They do that every single week, and they're getting good contributions out of Alan Lazard. And I just think, you know, for the Packers too, there's a lot of narrative stuff, legacy type of stuff here that's going to be at play. And I think the Packers win this game. I'm picking them here. Even if it was at Levi's Stadium, I still might pick them. You know, as much as I think the Niners are going to be dangerous and are going to be, you know, if they can play the way that they did in the first half against Dallas last week, they could make this game really interesting. But I think the Packers have the better roster, better coaching staff right now, and absolutely the better quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, certainly I feel like the Packers should be the favorites here, but I think it's not hard to imagine the scenario where the Niners do win this game. It's something that looks a lot like those 2019 wins, where it's just the defensive line is really good, like we saw against the Cowboys last week, and they can run the ball effectively. And we get a big play out of Debo. We get a big play out of the special teams. That is, by the way, that is the weakness for the Packers. They do have a very, very problematic special teams. And it feels like when you come into the postseason and everyone knows your special teams is bad, it feels like there's going to be a game where you're going to have to overcome that. You just don't know which one it is in advance. And that could be the game this week.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't trust. And it's every element of their special teams.
Yes, they're all bad.
Nobody trusts Mason Crosby. Every single time a punt is in the air, you just like hold your breath because you're fully expecting that the Packers are going to muff it. You just can't trust any element of their special teams. So, but I do think Aaron Rodgers is probably good enough for them to overcome a special teams meltdown here or there, but on a really cold day. And I don't think it's supposed to be like historically cold by any means in Green Bay, but it's not going to be pleasant by any means.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to be the Cowboys game where it was, you know, 70 degrees and there was
the worst element you had to deal with was the sun.
Yes, exactly. Not the problem at 8:15 on Saturday night in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Let's finish up here. Rams, Bucks. I'm really excited about this game. I mean, I feel like we're going to get a lot of answers about these two teams because the Rams, it feels like, you know, last week was the sort of first time it felt like they were dominant. But you look at their record. I mean, after losing to the Packers in week 12, they finished by winning five in a row before losing to the Niners in week 18. We saw basically a perfect game from them. I mean, they dominated the Cardinals from start to finish, just an absolute ass kicking of a performance from the Rams. And it felt like we sort of came into that game a lot of people were wishy-washy about the Rams, even though they had won those five straight games. I felt like people did not see them as really a dominant team. And now it feels like, well, maybe they're getting hot at the right time. Maybe the Niners game, where they were up for most of the game and blew a lead. And that was obviously unfortunate. Maybe that was sort of a minor misstep and they're just really playing at a high level. They have a lot of guys who are healthy. Of course, the safeties are an issue, but it feels like they're in better shape in terms of their health than the Buccaneers, where they were already coming into the postseason injured. And then last week, Tristan Wirfs gets hurt early on. Ryan Jensen gets hurt. The Bucs were still so much better than the Eagles that it didn't matter. But as the game went on, we saw Tom Brady getting pressured. We saw the Bucs unable to build on their early lead. And I think this could be a tough matchup given who the Rams have up front in Aaron Donald and Von Miller. I think for me, when I think about how the Rams could win this game, it starts there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as we're sitting here recording this on Thursday afternoon, both Ryan Jensen and Tristan Wirfs have not practiced all week. We knew that was going to be the case. I mean, Bruce Arians was pretty clear, I think, at the beginning of the week that neither of those guys would practice. They'd take it right up to kickoff. You know, obviously, we saw Tristan Wirfs try to come back into that game and then had to leave. Ryan Jensen was able to come back in, is, you know, probably in the conversation for, you know, biggest tough guy in the league who's going to try to play through everything. So, you know, I would imagine that at least Ryan Jensen will give it a really good effort to try to play, but those are significant injuries, because those aren't just, you know, good offensive linemen. They are elite, best of the best in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You know, guys who were either getting all pro, you know, first team, second team type of all pro guys. So, that's a huge deal. And for the Rams, like, you know, and it's not even just, you know, obviously we know how Aaron Donald will destroy games, and Aaron Donald versus Ryan Jensen is like, that's a really, really, really fun matchup. And it's one of those where, you know, that both guys probably going to get a personal foul at some point in that game. They're going to be, you know, spitting at each other, and you know, they will be going at each other before, during, after the whistle, every single snap. Yes. But it's not just Aaron Donald. It's Von Miller is doing now what the Rams brought him in to do. He had a really slow first month or two when he first arrived at the Rams, but now he's really on this tear where I think he has at least a sack in the last four games. He's been really disruptive in the running game. You know, he's had some good games against Tom Brady in the past.
Yes.
Let's just say that he's had some very memorable performances against Tom Brady in really big stages. So he kind of knows what it takes to face a Brady team. And when Brady gets rid of the ball so quickly, Leonard Floyd has been playing really, really well on the Rams front. He's kind of like the forgotten guy when we talk about Von Miller and Aaron Donald. But look, I was at the game in week three, when the Bucs and the Rams played the first time. That game was in LA. And that was also another, like, that was by far the Rams' best game over the first half of the season.
For sure.
I remember leaving that game going, oh, wow, like, this is why the Rams traded for Stafford. You know, it was a near perfect game out of Stafford. They were, you know, hitting explosive plays. I mean, that was when DeSean Jackson was still there, and there was, like, you know, a deep DeSean Jackson touchdown. He, like, ran out the tunnel and Sean McVay, like, chased him out the tunnel. Like, they were just kind of being silly. But, you know, we've seen that when they put together a mistake-free game, they're as good as anybody in the NFL. Just that question that's always going to be out there, right, about the Rams is, when are we going to get that bad Matthew Stafford game? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even have to do so much with, like, what did the defense do to force the bad Matthew Stafford game? Because he can just do it on his own.
Oh, he sure can.
And, you know, is he going to have an early pick six? Is, you know, when is that going to, because it just feels inevitable that he's going to have one of those games, that he's not going to be able to go, what, three or four straight games in the postseason, you know, pitching shutouts, where it's just hard to envision that. So that's the thing that I just can't quite get out of my brain, is like, when is the bad Matthew Stafford game coming?
Right. It feels, and honestly, it doesn't have to be a bad game. Like, we saw in that Niners game, he was, like, unconscious in the first half, right? Like, he was like 13 of 14 in the first half. He was going crazy. And then two interceptions afterwards, and that swung the game towards San Francisco. He had the interception in overtime. Then he had one. When was the other interception? I believe it was in the second half. I could be mistaken, but he was for a period in that game, he was playing incredible. And we know that can flip. Like, there's no rhyme or reason. It doesn't take an injury. It does not take a big hit. It does not take some dramatic shift. It could just be Matthew Stafford decides to, he's feeling himself and makes some terrible decisions with the football. So you always have to be on watch. I don't think you can ever turn your fear off if you're backing the Rams about Matthew Stafford just blowing up. Now, granted, I remember about a decade ago now, Joe Flacco pieced together four great games and won a Super Bowl. And Matthew Stafford's better than Joe Flacco. I saw Nick Foles piece together. The first game was pretty terrible. The Falcons game, he was awful. But the next two games, very good. Nick Foles, two great games, won a Super Bowl. Matthew Stafford can certainly get hot. I mean, we know Matthew Stafford can be incredible when he's playing good football. So I don't want to rule it out, but I do think I'm scared. And when you're playing Tom Brady, like Tom Brady, granted, without all of his receivers, Tom Brady without some of his offensive linemen, definitely not Tom Brady at you know, peak form, but I still trust Tom Brady more than I trust Matthew Stafford. And that does mean something here.
Yeah, just the margin for error is going to be a lot smaller.
For sure.
In that game. But yeah, I mean, this could have been the NFC Championship game. And there was probably a lot of times this season where you thought this could happen. I mean, the star potential here, the star quotient, super high. I mean, the Bucs wide receiver depth has taken a major hit, but Mike Evans is healthy. Like, give me Mike Evans snaps in the red zone. One-on-one against Jalen Ramsey, if that's the matchup that we end up seeing a lot. I mean, that is as good as it gets. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly. I mean, the cornerback has been a major issue for the Bucs all year. It remains an issue at this point of the season. They didn't have an answer for Cooper Kupp the first time these two teams played when they were even a little bit healthier at cornerback. They ended up losing, I think, two corners in that game. I don't know if they have a better answer for Cooper Kupp now than they did. And, you know, at any other point this season, look, nobody has had an answer for Cooper Kupp. I mean, I think if one team had figured it out, everybody would be copying it, but it just doesn't exist right now.
And then the other the other injury is Andrew Whitworth, who was injured early in that game, came back, clearly not a normal self. And then after halftime, I believe, got out of there, did not return, has not practiced as we record this. And that's another big injury for, you know, against a Bucs team that we saw in the Super Bowl. Hey, if you lose your best offensive lineman, that might hurt your passing game's efficiency. Matthew Stafford does not need any help to make mistakes, like we said.
Yeah, and the Bucs pass rushers are getting healthy again. Shaq Barrett is back. You know, Jason Pierre-Paul has missed a lot of time this season, but, you know, they should at least have the bodies there that they didn't have through stretches late in the season.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is the toughest game to pick of the four for me. Yeah. Who do you pick here?
What's the line right now?
The line is, I want to say 3. Yeah. It's Bucks by 3.
Yeah. So sentimentally, there's a little bit of me that, you know, I'd love to see Vaughn kind of go on this, Vaughn Miller go on kind of this, a big playoff run. And the Rams are really fun, really, really, really fun to watch. And I think Packers Rams would be a really fun, Packers Rams would be a really fun NFC Championship game. But I have learned my lesson many, many, many times, and I'm not going to pick against Tom Brady. So I'll go with the Bucks here. I'll pick a home team finally.
I
guess I'm picking both home teams in the NFC.
Yes. Two road teams in the AFC for you, two home teams in the NFC. I feel trapped because I picked Chiefs Rams before this season. And then I picked Chiefs Rams when I did my playoff preview. And I was kind of leaning towards what I picked previously. Now I feel totally trapped. I feel like the Bucs should win this game. And I do have more faith in Tom Brady than Matthew Stafford, but I'm telling myself a story where I talk myself into the Rams winning because I'm already priced in from before the year. I just think,
I think it's fair. I mean, I think the Rams are a better team. I think their roster is better. I think they have, you know, the better, more elite players, the best of the best. You have the best cornerback in the NFL. You have the best wide receiver this season. You have the best defensive tackle in the league. So I don't think it's crazy to pick against the Rams at all. I think when they play their best football, they're going to be really, really hard to beat. I just can't bring myself to bet against Tom Brady. That's literally the only thing to it. It's just like years and years and years of making the mistake of picking against Tom Brady. And then
it's 100%. Like a couple of years ago during the Super Bowl, I picked the Niners to beat the Chiefs, and I watched it. And I had to watch that entire game hoping Patrick Mahomes wouldn't do something great. And I felt like a genius for three quarters. And in the fourth quarter, I'm like, oh, I'm a big dum-dum because I picked Jimmy Garoppolo over Patrick Mahomes. I'm never going to make that mistake again. And it kind of feels like, you know, Stafford is better than Garoppolo, and Brady maybe not quite as good as Mahomes was at that peak in that playoff run. But I shouldn't have made that mistake. I should have gone with the really good quarterback. And I'd rather pick the better quarterback and be wrong than pick the worst quarterback and feel stupid and be wrong that way. So sure. I'm picking the Rams, but I'm not thrilled about it.
Yeah. And I think this NFC field is really great, right? I mean, I think the Cowboys, I think, would have been a very worthy team to be in this divisional round. But I think just about any NFC championship game matchup that we're going to get out of this game or this weekend is going to be really, really good and really fun for next weekend.
Yeah, I'm excited. These are four really fun games, and we're going to be able to watch them all this weekend. But Lindsay, please tell the people where they can find out more about your NFL coverage.
Sure. So get yourself a subscription to The Athletic. We're always running great deals. You can follow me on Twitter at by Lindsay H. Jones. And then I'm on The Athletic Football Show with Robert Mays weekly. This week we went back through all of our not necessarily like our bad takes, but like the places that we were wrong and how it can inform our decision-making and our takes better into the future. So I apologize for a few things that I was wrong about. So that was our show this week. And at Twitter by Lindsay H. Jones, my daughter's picks. Spoiler alert, I Googled how to make a TikTok. So we've got a new pick format this week. We're really excited. While you're there, buy some Girl Scout cookies.
A lot of stuff to plug.
Highly
recommend all of
it. Look, not my first time at doing this, right?
That's smart. You've got to take advantage of the opportunities while you have the chance. Lindsay Jones, you know it's a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to my friend Lindsay Jones. Check out her work at The Athletic. Of course, check out her daughter Lena's picks on Twitter each and every week. We have more audio coming next week, heading down to the final few games for the NFL season. It is really going to be a fun weekend. Hope you guys enjoy the games and hope you are doing well. More audio next week.